Hello and welcome to another episode of In the Margins. My name is Eli and here with me today is Kiefer. Kiefer is an aspiring writer, podcaster, and researcher with a particular interest in fantasy, sci-fi, and dystopian genres. He runs a podcast with Radio Laurier that focuses on progressive ideas within nerd culture. And you can find him at radio_nerdWLU on Instagram and researches new religious movements and social media. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm, you know, happy that the holidays are over.
I don't blame you. They can be overwhelming.
Yeah, well, my birthday is the day after Christmas, so it...
Oh, happy belated birthday.
Oh, well, thank you. It brings a whole extra level to the pain, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair. I have a cousin who's born on Christmas, and I remember one time someone got him, like, one boot for Christmas, one boot for his birthday, and it was like, come on.
Oh, no.
That's such a jerk move.
My mom would, like, put my birthday presents behind the tree, and then like before Christmas, and then when I would reach to go and open them during Christmas, she'd be like, no, that's for tomorrow, that's for your birthday. And I told her recently that was like a form of psychological torture because it was definitely scarring, but
you have presents, you can't use them till tomorrow.
It's dumb.
Well, on the bright side, now you have the power to do whatever you want as an adult.
It's true. Yeah. It's nice, too. There's like a bunch of sales on just for my birthday. At least that's what I've led to be believed.
Nice.
That's the only reason they're on, right?
Oh, right. Boxing Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or actually, it's Kiefer Day, obviously.
It's Kiefer Day. Yeah. Kiefer Week now, I guess.
Oh, that's true. It's Kiefer Week.
Yeah. That's definitely what it comes from.
That is definitely the reason why things are going on sale. It's all because of you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's fantastic.
So, to hop right into things, since we're talking about the holidays, mm-hmm. why not start with your major? So you are into religious studies. So what made you decide to go into that?
Yeah, I mean... religion's always been something that's really fascinated me. I've never really been religious. I had the experience of like a white kid growing up in a rural environment. So Christianity was kind of shoved down
everywhere.
My throat.
Yeah.
My mom even taught like Sunday school for a period.
Oh.
If I remember correctly. I think this was when I was really young. But... religion and sort of the things that people believe and the things that people practice and how sort of a religious worldview influences how a person sees the world around them has always been something really fascinating to me. And learning more about that as I grew up, it was always something in the back of my mind. And originally when I went to Laurier here, I was going in for history.
Okay.
And I ended up taking on a whim a religions class. What was it? Religions of the Americas 1. And we talked about Christianity and Judaism, but then we also talked about indigenous religions. And
okay.
It was the first time in my life that I'd learned about residential schools, which is
really
sad because I was 24 at the time.
Oh my god.
25. It's probably 25. And that's because when I went to high school, we didn't have any of that. Like a rural
right.
environment, right? But also, I just don't think they were teaching about that very much. Because I definitely had history courses where we talked about indigenous cultures. But we never talked about that.
I remember having a conversation with my aunt not that long ago. They were talking about like the residential schools
mm-hmm.
and how they had no idea they were happening.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting that you have like such a generational shift now where people my age, not that you're that much older than me. I think you're like, what, 8, 9 years older than me?
Around that, yeah.
like, just like having this shift where suddenly we're talking about it all the time, suddenly everyone's aware of it. But you have to wonder then, what's happening now that we don't know about, that isn't being taught?
It is a little scary to think about it like that too. Yeah. And I mean, when I was taking that class too, people were like, oh yeah, I learned about this in high school. And I was like, really? Oh my, like that's awesome.
Or maybe it was just your high school.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I mean, I was older then too. I was already like, I guess I'm a mature student, air quotation mm-hmm. marks. Yeah, I remember them being like, oh yeah, we have this thing like orange shirt days and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, we had that.
Yeah, and I don't, that I think is a thing that started happening after like I graduated from high school, which is unfortunate because I feel like there are definitely some kids I went to high school who could have used some education on things like that.
Oh, there are people that went to my high school that needed it and did not absorb any of it. So...
But yeah, back to, I guess, your original question. Yeah, it's always been something that's been in the back of my mind. That's been something that's like an interest of mine. And that combined with just really awesome teachers at Laurier sort of pulled me in that direction and pulled me away from history and stuff and made me decide to get into religious studies.
Interesting. Is there any religion that you like to research in particular over another?
So I did my undergraduate thesis last year, well, into this year too, which was a fun experience over COVID.
I don't have to do a thesis. I'm not jealous.
Well, there you go. That's good. You have to learn a bunch of languages though, right? So
yeah, French, Spanish, German, and then I can add on other languages.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
The real fun is when you have all three in the same day. That's when things get like, wild.
Ooh, that would be an interesting day.
Spanish and French is usually okay because they're similar enough. But when you have, one time I had French, Spanish, German, Arabic all in the same day, and that messed with my brain. I couldn't, my brain was not up to switch that many times.
Yeah, that would be a trip for sure.
And then you're adding English.
Yeah, so for my undergraduate paper, I did work on Wicca, and it sort of expanded because Wiccans, you know, the definition of what a Wicca is pretty diverse, and you could find a lot of different people, and it's under a greater heading of neo-paganism, which is basically like pagan revivals or modern reimaginings of sort of pagan ideas. And so I got to experience very wide variety of different views on one singular religion, which was really interesting. As for like I guess it's really just every time I learn something new about a religion, it's really amazing because there are always going to be things that I don't know being an outsider to basically every religion. There are going to be things that I don't know or haven't learned or don't fully understand until I have it explained by someone who's a part of that religion. And that was probably the thing that made me want to continue and go into grad school and like continue studying religion was the experience of getting to interview people who are part of those religions, getting to talk to people. That I think was the best part about that whole experience, even though it was over Zoom and it wasn't how I envisioned it when I was getting together. Cause I started actually that project like in the middle of the summer.
So it kind of got cut off.
Yeah, like I started it in advance of when the actual, because it's a 2-semester long thing, but I started it like early because I wanted to start getting into it. And when you do interview stuff, you have to do a whole bunch of like ethics board things. You need to figure out what your interview questions are going to be, and then you have to get them approved. You need to fill out like full forms, and you need to get, you need to make, what are they called? Confidentiality forms as well for everybody you interview. It's a whole process, and I got a taste of what it's like to do it in grad school. Apparently it's like so much worse for grad school. So that'll be fun in the future, because I definitely would like to do more of it, because it was something I really enjoyed. Not the filling of the paperwork, but everything else.
I get you in that part. And then if you have to get other people to sign, sometimes it can be really tedious because they'll forget about it. Because I have to do the same thing with Radio Laurie. I have to get people to sign forms and be like, hey, we won't sue you if we record you and then use your voice. Or like, I don't have to get my questions approved, but in the beginning it was pretty nerve-wracking having someone look over everything every time.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt that to a certain degree too when I started doing podcasts, because I wanted like the first you had to fill out like a form of what you wanted to talk about and all the stuff.
You had to have a proposal.
Proposal, there we go. Thank you for the word. It's early for me still. filling out the proposal and everything like that. Sometimes I fall into like the perfectionist mindset and I want to have everything perfect right from the get-go. It's not going to be perfect right from the get-go. It was a little nerve-wracking to begin with there too.
Yeah. Joining Radio Laurie, I found, was really really easy. And when I gave them my proposal and they were like, all right, start making it. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I felt too. I was like, what? Like, we're not,
there's no like workshopping. No, this is how you can do this thing. They're just like, all right, here's an email of all the things you need to sign. Good luck.
It blew me away a little bit too. I was like, oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Guess I'll just start.
I guess we're doing this. Yeah. It was definitely surprising. I honestly thought like they might be like, here, like we need you to redo these parts of your proposal. I was just expecting like a closer to like an academic thing where you send in like multiple proposals and they're like, here, you need to change these things and that.
Yeah, I was expecting to be rejected a couple times, or I was expecting to like have someone like, I don't know, like really over my shoulder with editing or whatever. They don't care. was my first surprise with the last guy.
Not in a bad way or anything though.
Oh no, not in a bad way. But the last year I had Keegan mm-hmm. Grinch, and he was the station manager, and he basically went over, and I'm pretty sure he edited my episodes, and he would basically, he was like, all right, keep it to 5 edits that you need done. And I was like, oh, okay. But they would want like these timestamps, so you'd have to actually pay attention to your podcast while editing it. This year you can literally just send it in as is and they'll put it up, which I find really funny.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's cool that you got editing done.
I do it myself.
I've not had that experience. I remember, yeah, like I don't think I do any editing. I just talk. Like, I do editing as I go through. If I find, like, I said something, like, occasionally, like, a swear will leak out.
I swear on my podcast.
Really? See, they said that I wasn't allowed to, so I...
Oh, well, they haven't gotten mad at me for it yet.
Oh, I've been doing so much extra work then, because every time I do, I'll pause it, and then I'll swear a couple more times, like, without being recording it, because I'm like, Kiefer, why did you do that? You know, you now need to like figure out where you were. You need to delete that, the swear word. You need to like get back into the rhythm of saying what you do. I've gotten pretty good at that, like getting back into the rhythm though, so that's been interesting.
That's something that I really liked about podcasting, is that it really gave me, I've gotten a lot better at drawing answers out of people. I'm good at keeping conversations going now.
Yeah. Well, it would be a good skill to learn for an interview podcast, right? So that makes sense. Yeah.
Also, yeah. I learned something else that you learn when you're doing an interview podcast is the first thing any interviewer needs to learn is, okay, yes, you have your list of questions, but following that list of questions isn't going to make anything interesting. And if it's not like a conversation, people aren't going to want to listen, right?
Yeah.
So being genuinely curious, I guess, is how I would say, like, is a skill you learn.
I definitely had a similar experience when I was doing my interviews for my research. yeah, the list of questions that you have approved, like, they know that you're going to go off book. So the questions are basically like the guidelines for what you want to, how you want to direct the conversation.
They're making sure you're not being a jerk.
Exactly. Yeah. And, but the actual conversations went all over the place, depending on, I actually only got to interview two people because of how, like,
aww,
COVID definitely affected a lot of the, a lot of the research projects that were in my group and also mine specifically, because otherwise I think I would have been able to get in contact. I wanted to try to do like a group interview too. There's a couple of Neopagan groups that are out of like Toronto and the area. And I kind of wanted to do like an in-person, like a focus group type thing as well.
That would be fun.
Yeah, like all those things sounded really awesome, and I really hope that, like, part of the reason I'm taking a year off after I finish graduating, before going to grad school, partially because I'm burnt out and COVID is like destroying my will to live, and because I would like to have a more regular grad school experience rather than rather than a removed from reality suck behind a screen one.
You're so
that's
picky,
just me
Heber.
You know, I know. I'm so picky.
I can absolutely relate though, because I took a year off of like in between high school and going to university.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, I'll save up some money and then I'll go to university. And I get there and it's goddamn COVID. It's like, yeah, all right, I'm halfway through my second year and I haven't been on campus. I've never taken a class on campus. And it doesn't look like I will be at this rate.
Yeah, I do not envy your experience or the experiences of people who have joined in. It's not, I can't imagine it's been a fun one.
No. I mean, I guess on the bright side, I am potentially going to be going to teacher's college at some point. And it probably won't be directly after I graduate. So I'm assuming COVID will probably be either done or lessened by then. So it'll be a bit better.
I think it's good to take those breaks. Like I took a break between university and high school, and even between, like, I went to college beforehand too, because there was a time where I wanted to be a lawyer.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's so different than my mental image of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I realized that it fit well with some particular skill sets I have, like being able to argue with people very easily and
mm-hmm.
being very comfortable speaking in front of people.
I think you'd be good at it. It just doesn't seem like something you would necessarily, like, I guess, enjoy.
Yeah, that's sort of what it came to, was like being a lawyer is one of those jobs where your job consumes your life.
Yes, and, it does.
I don't, as much as, you know, I also have basically chosen like scholarship and writing as my, which also consumes your life. It's something that like I really enjoy as well. And I don't know if I would enjoy being a lawyer. Also, when I went to school, it was to be basically a paralegal to begin with. And then I was going to do a bachelor's in law school. It is impossible to find a paralegal job unless you have experience that doesn't exist. Like,
oh, fun. Oh, yeah. Isn't it like you need like 10 years experience doing something? But to get the experience, you need to have like, you need to get the job that you need to have to get the experience.
Yeah, the problem with law is that like paralegals are specialized and they're good and people need them, but lawyers' offices can get articling students, which are so law school is half actual in school and half articling, where you're basically being like a lawyer's assistant or an intern, right? And it's cheaper to hire articling students than it is to hire an actual paralegal, because an actual paralegal will, you know, they get paid pretty well and they would need like benefits and everything, right? So instead, a law office generally goes to articling students, and you can just get articling students all the time because there's people going through law school for it. And a lot of paralegals go to law school as well, and they don't necessarily become lawyers. They just go to law school to get the credentials. So, right. Yeah, I was basically trying to find jobs against those people and ended up working for Bell at a call center instead. So,
oh, no.
I mean, yeah, it wasn't the best. I do like, to a certain extent, an office environment more than... I've had a lot of experience working in like industrial settings growing up, like around mm-hmm. Woodstock. That's basically all the jobs back there. And I really don't like it. I don't like manual labor as my job. I like, you know, working out and being physical. I don't like doing the exact same motion every day for 10 hours. It's not a fun experience. And everybody in those things is just as miserable as you feel. So I would much rather be in an office environment where everybody's still miserable, but you get a comfy chair, and at least everybody's like mildly sarcastic about how miserable they are. Everybody's just, you know, they're half of a British comedian, you know?
Yeah, my sister met a psychic at a factory job once.
Psychic?
Yes, she claimed to be psychic. And then got mad at people for stealing her cup after they did not steal her cup.
Oh, clearly her gift is not very powerful. You know, on the topic of psychics, astrology and everything like that, that's an area where I would really like to do religious studies work in.
I would be very curious to see what would you study about it? Would it just like general, or do you have a specific topic in mind?
So over the pandemic, I met a few people that were really into astrology, just like through friends and playing video games, basically. And it was always fascinating how like there's this thing within religious studies where we talk about the differences between spirituality and someone who says they're spiritual and someone who says they're religious.
Right.
Specifically people who are like, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. My personal feeling, and this is something that like basically every religious studies scholar has a little bit of an opinion on, is that spiritual and religious are just the terms that we've like detached from religion itself. Religion isn't necessarily like Christianity, right? This right. regimented hierarchy, right? That's like organized religion. And I think that's what a lot of people specifically here in North America think about when you say religion. They think about like an organized right. religion. And then when they say spiritual, what I think they're thinking of like an unorganized religion, you know, they're thinking of something that's not necessarily set in stone, but that does have a lot of qualities that you would associate with religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be, there's definitely been some really fascinating research on like people who are spiritual but don't think of themselves as religious and how that relates to things. And specifically like astrology and stuff would be really fascinating to just get a lot of like group data about how people think about it. And I'm not 100% sure what exactly I would write about it, but it just seems like something I would be there's a lot of room there to think about things and to explore different ideas within religious studies.
Right. That's something I'd be interested in seeing because I wouldn't say I believe astrology, but I like looking at it for like fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who take it really seriously, I'm always curious because, like, where are you? They say that, like, the horoscopes are always true, whatever. And I'm like, all right, but who's making the horoscopes?
Yeah, I mean, that actually kind of leads into the other thing that I'm interested in is social media and how that grows religions. And you find a lot of astrology stuff on social media. A lot
yes,
of
it's everywhere.
Stuff like that. Yeah, it's all over the place. And it would intersect really well with that. I also have always had a fascination with, maybe because of the times that I grew up in, just like parasocial relationships with social media personalities and how that relates to religion. My working grad school ideas has to do with, like the religiosity of that relationship between a
social media persona? I was just about to say, I feel like at points it becomes almost like a religion.
Mm-hmm. It was sort of influenced. I took a course where we talked about celebrity worship and how close those things are to religion as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talked about Beyonce and stuff and that, as well as like the Kardashians. And while those are basically like extreme examples of celebrity worship, you see a lot of that. And I feel like we've started seeing more and more as the years go by, like putting specific celebrities up on
pedestals.
Yeah. I was going to say figurative pedestals, but sometimes actual pedestals, I'm sure. So it's really interesting to sort of take that and parallel it to like Twitch streamers who have a much smaller audience, but arguably just as dedicated fan bases.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen some crazy stuff happen in Twitch streamers. Even podcasters, if you get into like the audio drama side, like it gets really intense.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, like, you have those people who are just like diehard Joe Rogan fans for whatever reason. they'll, you know, sing his praises and watch, or not watch, listen to all of his episodes and stuff like that. He must have like thousands at this point. Or maybe not thousands, actually. I guess that would be like decades. And I don't think he's been doing that for that long. But he has a lot of episodes. And I would not want to listen to Joe Rogan talk that much. but I'm not a fan of Joe Rogan. I will say that I got bit by the VTuber bug this past year.
Oh yes, you and Iron Mouse.
Yeah, I do love Iron Mouse. She's fantastic. It's so it's partially inspired by my own enjoyment of Twitch and just like social media in general that I'm inspired by for my research.
I'm curious, what do you think about parasocial relationships when it comes to VTubers? Because I find people get attached to it's like a specific niche there that like the fans get attached and very hyper defensive. It's almost like the D&D fans.
It is on a level of that too. I think, I don't know if I'd call it a more extreme parasocial relationship. Maybe. I think it's maybe more intense would be the word.
Right.
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about, and people definitely do get very much so defensive. But I've also seen that with regards to like regular Twitch streamers too.
That is true.
I think it really depends on the individual streamer and sometimes the individual VTuber as well.
And whether they encourage or discourage that behavior.
Yeah, because Iron Mouse definitely discourages that because she streams with like some real, I shouldn't say real people. That's
with real people as opposed to her being fake.
Yeah, no, she's not a fake person. She's a real person too. But she streams with like people who aren't VTubers, and some of the people that she streams with, you know, people who stream together have relationships of a certain degree. You know, they have like friendships or, you know, working relationship or whatever. And I know that Iron Mouse gets angry and she'll chastise people when they talk about their relationship with other streamers. When like people will be like, oh, that person's dumb, they're treating you badly. And it's like, I've always taken it because I don't really, to a certain extent, I'm sure, like, I fall victim to the idea of parasocial relationships.
Oh, yeah. Nobody's free from them.
Yeah, nobody's immune to that. But I also do recognize very actively that these people are entertainers.
Yes.
And that whatever they are saying between each other when they're collaborating or playing together, you know, they wouldn't continue to play together if they actually like hated each other.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there's banter and stuff, you know.
They're gaining something from it if they are continuing to play, even if they hate each other.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's also, to a certain extent, they're human beings too. They're not like being put on a platter, even though they're cute anime girls. they're also human beings, right? So they, you know, they would, to a certain extent, I would hope at least, prioritize their mental health. And there's a lot of them that I watch that are very good about them. And that while some of them are actively sort of like politically left-leaning, most of them are very good at encouraging like healthy communities too, which I really appreciate. That's something that kind of turns me off a lot with a lot of social media, is they let their communities just get out of control. And then they don't take responsibility for cultivating communities like that. What it's their community, right? In my opinion, and maybe this is controversial, but they have a responsibility to police their community to a certain extent, and to, if not police, then set a specific example for what their community should be. And if not, and their community starts, you know, attacking other communities or attacking other creators, then they have a responsibility to, you know, pull the reins in to a certain degree.
I would agree to you to a certain extent. Like, obviously you can't control what everyone does.
No.
But or like necessarily the people that join you, but you can absolutely be like, yo, I've seen you guys doing weird shit. Stop doing that.
Yeah, you can encourage or discourage it for sure. And I think that at the very least, that is what you should be doing.
Yeah, if you're aware of it, you should be saying something.
Exactly. I can understand not being aware of it, and I can understand, to a certain extent, I mean, you see your Twitch chat, right? Or you see your comment section, even though comment sections on YouTube's are terrible. But there's a certain level where, you know, you need to be aware of that. It's part of your occupation, right? To a certain extent. And you do have a form of power in the influence that you wield, right? There's a reason why they're called influencers to a certain extent. Even though I hate that term, it's so weird. But they do have that influence. And then with that influence comes a certain amount of responsibility. And too often, I think in North America, especially when it comes to people who are even in news media, like in the States, for example, people just throwing off the responsibility for the things that they say, right? There comes a certain amount of responsibility with your freedom of speech, right? You can say whatever you want.
But doesn't mean there won't be consequences.
Exactly. But if what you say inspires someone to do something terrible, you are responsible for you know, what your words have done. Words are powerful at the end of the day. You're a language major, you know that. And you're responsible. I watched Spider-Man last week, so and they say the classic line, spoilers if anybody, but they say with great power comes great responsibility in this one. And so I've been kind of thinking about that lately, and with a lot of things, you know, the influence and the words that people say can carry a lot of power. And I think there's a lot of people who throw off the responsibility of that power. And well, for sure. Unfairly.
Even if you're talking about like on a smaller scale, if you have people in authority or even just parents and teachers, what you say can have a big impact. Although not to say that like every single word should be like carefully thought out, but because you never know what's going to stick with someone, what isn't. But when it comes to like big things or like commenting on like let's say someone's appearance or like their eating habits or things that are like very things they can't change are very personal to them. Like those types of things should be like, okay, what am I saying here? What message am I giving? Or even if you're thinking about like Iron Mouse, I think she's Russian, isn't she?
No, she's Puerto Rican.
Oh, I thought she was from Russia for some reason.
No, she's got streams where she like, sings in Spanish and speaks in Spanish and stuff like that. Yeah. I think she lives in Puerto Rico. She talks about it from time to time.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, the power of language. I was going to be like, she knows Russian, so now she knows English, power of language.
I think, you know, English is her second language still.
Oh, I don't know what language they speak in Puerto Rico.
Spanish, I think.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Duh, I should have guessed that. But yeah, I think being aware of that, and especially as you grow, I don't think you or I, through these podcasts specifically, will gain a huge audience. But it's very important to be aware of, I think.
Yeah, it is for sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm more just do it because I enjoy speaking to the void, hearing my own voice.
I think it'd be easier if I did a podcast like that, because now I have to like scramble every week to be like, oh God, do I have a guest? Do I have an episode?
You end up recording them in advance generally, right?
Generally when I can. So I have another episode backed up right now. So you will come out shortly after Jax. So you'll either come out like the first week of February or like the last week of January. I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to check the schedule. But yeah, the podcast comes out bi-weekly.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I do mine weekly and it's a scramble sometimes.
Yeah. So imagine doing that. So imagine doing that with having to organize guests to make all the sheets and stuff.
That would be a lot, especially with school and everything as well.
Yes. And being a co-president of another club. I would just lose my mind. So I do it bi-weekly.
That's fair. Yeah.
So talking about that, actually, I want to talk about promotion, because you and I both have Instagram accounts to promote our podcast. So how do you run your Instagram?
Very poorly.
Same.
I post basically whenever I upload, like the day or a day or two after I upload an episode, which I should get better at doing it the day I upload the episode, or like a little bit before or something like that. I really wish Instagram had like a feature where you could time when a post goes up.
Oh, because then I would
just make it right after I was done recording the episode and have it set to like come out.
Yeah, same. I always forget because I'm not the one publishing, right? So then it's like,
yeah,
wait, when did my episode go out? And I'm not entirely sure. They didn't tell me what time, I don't think. I just know it comes out on Mondays.
I believe mine comes out Tuesdays at 3 or 4, something like that. Because I have to have it in 24 hours before, and I'm usually like Monday morning scrambling around recording a podcast with a coffee and my oatmeal, which is something I would like to change this holiday season so that I can record a couple of episodes and have like a backlog.
Hey,
that would be helpful for my mental health, or at least to reduce a bit of stress on my Mondays.
I tried to have a backlog because I find that really helps, especially if you're like busy or something.
Mm-hmm.
So if something goes wrong.
Yeah. Or you're sick or something, you know, like unexpected stuff comes up, right?
Exactly. I basically, for all of last semester, I think minus one or two episodes, I had them all recorded in the summer. So it was really nice to not have to like try and scramble and push everything in. I'm going to have to record some, I think about five more during this semester. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back to the Instagram. I think it would be useful to take advantage of stories and do a little bit more in that regard. I have been, I post a fair amount of left-leaning and political content on my personal Instagram account.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe it might be beneficial to move that more to the podcast one.
Interesting.
I have had some people message me, and I've had some unpleasant conversations with people who I don't really talk to much anymore, but, you know, it's still not a fun experience to have people just like attack you in your DMs. And to a certain extent, some of those people, you know, like I'm bi and I don't always post stuff about that, but I do have like my stints where I do more of that, or I
Kiefer, are you shoving it down their throats?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely shoving it down their throats. It's like Pride Month, right? So I'm gonna post a bunch of stuff then, or you know, sometimes it. I think when's Bi Awareness Week?
It's like, I have no idea.
It's like November or October, and I remember posting a bunch then. Or if I see something interesting, I'll post like stuff. But yeah, I posted a meme about burning down police stations.
Stations?
Yeah, and I had like a guy that I used to go to youth group with, so that's how long ago I talked to that guy. And I guess he works in
a police station.
He's an auxiliary, I guess, which I didn't know, but he told me at the time because he was saying "we" a bunch, and I'm like, you're not a police officer. I don't know why you're saying "we." Like, talk about associating yourself with something and then getting angry with something that you're not actually a part of. But then his actual job is he works in like a juvie as like a guard. And I told him, I think I ended up telling him like, because he said something about his job being essential and that it's important. And I'm like, you jail children. That's not important at all. What are you talking about? But yeah, it was not a pleasant experience. I ended up just blocking him after I said what I wanted to say. But he was more like a friend of a friend. Previous to that, I had posted like some more feminist leaning stuff, and someone who I hadn't talked to literally since like high school messaged me and said something along the lines of posting these things isn't going to get you laid. And I was like, that's sort of missing every single message. But okay.
Yeah, you know, all those women out there looking for the feminist posts before they go, fun.
Yeah, that's the trigger that drops pants, right? Is feminist
absolutely
on your Instagram page. But no, yeah, that was a nice, easy block. It's just been, it feels like it's picked up lately, and maybe that's because everything's really polarized right now. But I would like a little bit of separation. And also, I mean, to a certain extent, I feel like it would help my podcast grow if I'm doing more of that posting too.
Yeah, you can get more hate followers.
Sure. Yeah, that's what I want. I want hate followers. I mean, absolutely. I don't care who's listening to my voice. You just need to listen.
Yeah, get those stats up.
Yeah. To be honest, do you get stats?
Actually, no, I have no idea who, because it's through Radio Lore, you don't get to look at the stats. So unless I'm planning on posting them to YouTube or potentially Spotify, but I have zero idea how many people listen. I know Melissa listens.
Yeah, I have idea who listens to my. I've had people like message me and say that they listen. Like I've had like old friends on. I've had positive experiences from my podcast as well, and from my stuff posting on Instagram. I had a friend from high school who I haven't talked to for a really long time, who, you know, messaged me and was just like, oh, I really liked your podcast and it was really great. And he was aww, like, I you know, we never talked about you being bi, but he was like really supportive about it. And I was like, oh, that's really great. Awesome. You know, that's a great experience. I like to remember the great experiences. Sometimes the negative experiences are funny though, and I like to talk about those too.
Yeah. I haven't gotten any hate. The only thing I got was someone messaging me being like, hey, we make art for podcast covers and whatever. And it was like, at a cheap price, and I was like, oh, thanks, but I'm school affiliated, I don't really need it. And they're like, okay, have a great weekend. And it was Monday. I know, it was very funny. Just, they commented out of nowhere. I think it's because I tagged it. I use the hashtags.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how to use hashtags. I feel like I sound like a boomer when I say something like that, but I have no idea what I'm doing with half those things. I feel like I need to go to a like seminar or something, like some sort of, I recall the one meeting they talked about that for Radio Laurier. They talked about seminars. I think so.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They did. I got sent. I got sent the recording.
Oh, for the episode?
Or for one of the meetings about podcasts.
Mm. Yeah, because that would be something. Actually, would I be able to get that recorded?
Yeah, if you email, I think it's Amelia. You can get it from her.
Okay. Yeah, because that would be interesting to learn a little bit, and even like to take like a seminar online about like social media and how to connect with people. Because I'm completely lost. I have no idea.
Well, we can talk about that a little bit later, I think. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know, since we've spent almost the entire time talking about podcasting, mm-hmm. Let's talk about writing.
Okay.
What got you into writing?
It's something that I've actually done for a really long time, like since I was young. And I don't think I really recognized it until university.
Oh.
And until, you know, we were talking about, you know, words have powers. And I've had some really good teachers in university who have, you know, mentioned repeatedly and from different sources about my writing and it being, you know, well written and good and everything like that. And it's been something that I never really thought about, or I never really realized was something that I enjoyed doing, but it is something that I've always done. Like I've always really enjoyed writing generally fiction, but clearly I do enjoy writing nonfiction and essays and stuff as well. I think the only thing I really don't like writing is journalism. I don't like journalism.
No, really?
I'm not really sure why. I think it's like, I like to be long-winded to a certain degree, and journalism.
Doesn't let you do that.
Yeah, but yeah, like when I was in high school, I was part of a Star Wars fan RPG forum where you get to write up like stuff about a character and everything like that. When I was younger, I would write different stories and stuff like that. I'm sure there's paper in lots of landfills all over the place that is just filled with my writing about like maybe a video game that I wanted to make and like ideas about that game. Or like ideas about stories and stuff like that. World building is a really fun thing for me, and it's like a bit of a hobby that I like doing.
Oh, interesting. That's like the least of what I do.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's the only planning I do. When I actually go down to write things, I feel like I could benefit from doing a little bit more planning in that regard.
When I write things, I just write and then I worry about if it makes sense later.
That's probably a good way to go. Sometimes I'm bad about just like not going back and reading my writing. And I really should do that because I think it would benefit from a couple of passes of some editing.
Well, that, and also you can learn a lot about, like, you can improve a lot just by reading your own writing, because then you're like, oh, okay, this is what I do when I'm writing this or when I'm writing that. For example, I like lists. I like making lists. I constantly have sentences with three descriptors or three actions in it.
Okay.
That's my thing.
Hmm. That's interesting. Lists. Okay.
Yeah, you'll always see me making lists. I love me some lists.
Nice.
Actually, it's on my podcast Instagram too. Every time I have an episode, it's like, today we're talking about this, this, and this.
You know what? Now that you say it, I do that too with my podcast things. Like, I make notes for each podcast episode, and then I'll have like lists of what I'm supposed to talk. Like, it's all in bullet form. All the notes for what I'm talking about.
Right.
I don't really do that with writing though. I guess I don't know. I like word vomit, I guess, on the page. Sometimes I'll do, if I'm doing it, I have actually before done like planning for stories, and it's turned out pretty good, and I feel like I would benefit from it. The problem comes from, I think the source of me not reading back my stuff is school, because I have a problem with procrastination, so I will leave things to the last minute, and then because I'm a fairly fast writer, I will vomit out the paper and then hand it in because I'm like, I'm done. Just go.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't generally read. Like, I'll read through my work once I've written it, but after that, I usually just hand it in. I don't do drafts or anything. I just go.
Yeah, I don't do drafts either, and it's. I think the most editing I did was for my research project, and that was because it was like 35 pages long.
Did you do the thing where, like, I know in high school they'd be like, they'd make me like write drafts, so instead I would write the thing, then make it worse and hand that in as my draft?
I did do some of that in high school. And yeah, that was because I didn't want to do it. There were times where I'd write a draft and then that would be the same thing as my like final project, and I'd get lower marks, but it'd be like, I'm like, this is good. I'm happy with this. I never got the need. If you don't need a first draft, then what's the point? Like, why am I doing a first
draft? Yeah, if your writing is good enough on the first go, why do you need to write a draft?
Yeah, I don't need to change anything. Like, why? If I'm happy with this, why do I need to continue to, like, futz with it, I guess?
Because everyone wants... it's just like with the... I don't know if you were taught this, but we were taught, like, the hamburger paragraph thing.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Like, I don't, or like how to do the essays. I don't follow that at all, and I still get good marks. I don't do the okay opening paragraph, three paragraphs in the center, closing paragraph. I don't do that. I throw paragraphs in willy nilly. I still get like high 80s. Like it, and then people are confused because they don't know how to do anything that isn't a 5-paragraph essay.
Yeah, I think that. What benefited from that was me like kind of forgetting about that stuff in between university and high school.
The real benefit of taking a year off.
Yeah. Well, cause I think there's a lot of benefits of taking the year off, but the thing is like when you go into university without that baggage, it's easier to just learn how to do it right from the get go than to unlearn a specific way that you learned in high school and then try to do it. Cause I've heard from so many professors that are just like, don't do the hamburger thing. Like don't do that. That's, you know, restricting yourself with something that's so.
It should be a tool that you use if you're stuck or like to know generally how it goes, but you don't have to just do that is I think where people get stuck.
Yeah. I think, honestly, it would benefit people more if they, instead of, you know, telling you how you should write your essays in high school, they just focused on paragraph structure. I think paragraph structure is such a much more useful tool. And it's something that I've learned in university that is super useful and that I'm still in some degrees, you know, trying to fully master.
I must drive people nuts. I throw in new paragraphs everywhere because I hate looking at long paragraphs. So like sometimes anytime it's a new thought, this is what you're supposed to do. But professors are always like, keep it as one paragraph. And I'm like, oh, fine. I just like throw in new paragraphs everywhere and they're like, stop, just make it one. And I'm like, no, I hate looking at it.
I do some of that with academic writing, but then I go like buck wild when I do fiction. I'll have paragraphs that are like
one sentence.
I'll just go all over the place. They'll be like, I like using like breaks, like putting like line breaks basically, and or like a dash or something, and it's like, scene's over, we're into another scene, and just like going all over the place with my stuff. I'm a big fan of, at the beginning of some stories, writing like in italics a sort of in-universe description of the background of whatever's happening. Like I started writing a in a same setting. I wrote a couple of stories now that I kind of developed over the summer because I was I took a medievalism course called Medievalism in Science Fiction. Mm-hmm. And for the final project, we had to write like a short story. And so I developed like a post-apocalyptic kind of dying earth kind of like setting. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed it in the way that, and I started it off by like basically in italics, like doing the background or the italics. What was the section about? It was about basically what happens after the events of the story, but told in a history book from way far in the future that someone had written about the events.
Oh.
And I can, yeah. And then, so I continued that in a couple of other stories that I've written since then in the same universe, but following different characters. And it's really fun. I really enjoy it. I don't know. I think it came from like a fantasy book that I wrote or that I read, where like new chapters would have like sections of in-universe books.
Okay.
What is it? I think it's, yeah, Malazan Book of the Fallen is the series it's called.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's something I really enjoyed, and I realized that I really like doing it with my writing too, because it adds out of context context, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I do. I know what you mean.
Yeah. And it's fun. It's fun to imagine writing. I don't think I could write like extensive amounts in universe, but it's fun to like write little blurbs here and there.
All right. We are past the 55-minute mark. So, Kiefer, I have two final questions for you. One, is there anything we haven't talked about yet that you would like to talk about?
I don't think so.
No? Covered it all pretty good?
I think we went over a lot of stuff.
We did.
We didn't really talk about, I mean, I touched on being bi, but we didn't really talk about that as much.
Do you want to talk about it?
We could talk about that for like a minute or two here, yeah.
All right, go for it.
yeah, it's a very interesting experience, I think. I only came out more recently. I mean, you mentioned like that there's an age gap between me and you, and high school was definitely not an inclusive place, probably combined with the time and also where I grew up.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where in retrospect, it's like, yeah, the signs were definitely there. But at the same time, you know, it takes some time to, you know, sort of get used to it and to, you know, embrace the idea. And, you know, some of the people that I hung out with previous to now, that I don't really hang out with as much, definitely have shown homophobia to me, and along with some other things that aren't very pleasant, after I've came out. And I think that, you know, it's something, it's a big problem. It's not something that I think I, it sounds terrible to be like, I didn't really, you know, face it as much until I encountered it myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it did sort of come with that way. I mean, I am like a white man. There's a certain amount of privilege that comes with that. And it's been a lot. I think the past 2 years have been a lot of me unpacking that and how that interacts with my identity and how those things come together into how I act in the world. I think it's most like the thing, the creative thing that I do the most with regards to that is definitely the podcast. And that's sort of the outlet that I get. But it started to creep into my writing to a certain degree too, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think it influencing those things is really important. And I think that there aren't a lot of openly bisexual men looking at it.
There are a lot more, I've noticed, openly bisexual women than there are men.
Yeah. And, you know, I've gotten that from like dating apps and people will comment on that and be like, what's that like? And I'm like, well, it's not particularly fun, but, you know, it is who I am. And yeah, I think having more of me genuinely reflected in my art is something really important to me.
What you said earlier about not realizing until you came across it yourself, I think is a pretty common experience for a lot of people. Because if you're not a visible minority, a lot of people aren't going to be aware of it. And even for visible minorities, there are going to be a lot of things that you're not aware of if you're not a part of those other groups. So I wouldn't feel too bad about it because you've come around to it. If you were in like your, let's say, mid-30s, early 40s, I'd be concerned that you hadn't found out anything yet. But
being in my 20s, it's everything is about learning in your 20s, right?
Exactly. And final question, is there anything you'd like to say to other creators out there? So maybe someone who's thinking of starting a podcast, who wants to write, who, I don't know, just wants to try something new.
I think it's probably a little bit of a cliche answer, but just doing it is something that I know I struggle with as well. If you wait for the motivation to make something or to do something, it's never going to come. Yep. You need to just sit down and do it. The podcast, I think, was the first time that I did that, and it's went great. And I think it's been a good experience for me to just push and keep doing things like that, and to just sit down and just, you know, sit down and write, or sit down and make an episode, or sit down and do whatever else is next on the horizon. I got into painting recently. It's been fun.
Oh, nice.
It's more a therapeutic and like relaxing thing rather than something I'm gonna, you know,
try to share
with the world. But it's fun, and it's nice embracing those things without like expecting anything, you know? Like I said, the podcast is more just me speaking to the void because I want to. And I think embracing that more will allow you to make something that is you, rather than something that you think that people want to hear, or something that you think people want to read or see or whatever. You know, people are going to enjoy you as a creator for you, and not enjoy a creator who's trying to create content that people want to see.
Mm-hmm. And also, about the motivation thing, a lot of the times motivation only comes after you've started doing the thing.
It's true.
So, because I used to wait around for motivation back when I was in like my first, I'd say, 2-ish years of writing. Mm-hmm. But if you wait for motivation, it probably won't come. And half the time when it does come, it's time for you to go to bed. So just do it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something, like the motivation issue is something that's come up in my 20s for sure. It was never a problem for me when I was younger. And it's becoming less of a problem now that I get over it. And it's never going to come if you wait. That's something that's applicable to a lot of life situations. It's just, if you want to do something, do it. Like, it might be hard and you might stumble a lot, but doing it and being able to try it, and whether or not you succeed, having been able to do it and enjoy it is something that is really powerful, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me. This has been a very, I think, informative hour.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been fun.
Yeah. All right. This has been another episode of In the Margins. If you like our show, check us out at RadioLaurier.com or at the Instagram page at In the Margins Podcast for more episodes. And if you want to check out what Kiefer's doing and hear some of his rants, you can find him at Instagram or on Instagram at Radio_NerdWLU on Instagram. I just said that twice. Or at RadioLaurier.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.